Here we are at the ending of our third full day and night practicing. We might be thinking, I went on a retreat to get peaceful, and I feel like I've been in a boxing match and lost a knockout. And usually the match is over, but then you have to get up and get knocked out again and again. What is this meditation? One of our friends says, enlightenment is death by a thousand cuts. This is why the Buddhas oftentimes come from the warrior caste. There is a warfare, but it's a spiritual warfare. And you can't kill the enemy. There's a wrestling, a struggling. And some of the qualities of the warrior, that persistence, that willingness to hang in there, that understanding that sometimes to do something really important requires us to undergo difficulty and pains. These are the qualities of determination and of willingness to hang in there that are important in the path. And you think, well, that's what I'm trying to get away from, is all this fighting. And if it was this difficult, well, the Buddha once said that it's easier to conquer 10,000 soldiers in individual combat. Than it is to train the heart and subdue the heart. Well, Kitty Sorrow, thanks. I wish you could have told me that at the beginning. What are we doing here? Because if we don't, yes, it's a big job to fully turn the heart around. But when we don't make any effort, we know the consequences on some level. When we just follow the automatic reactions, when we don't get our way and people get in our way and we say and do things, we just look around the world and can see some of the carnage, some of the catastrophe that comes from people acting out in the ways that are destructive to others, destructive to ourselves, destructive even to Mother Earth. We're on this suicide mission of thinking we're going to get happy by consuming more and more and more so that the economy gets bigger, 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 bigger as we keep consuming more than we really need, and more than the earth can offer. When we're not clear and not wise, we do things that cause harm to ourselves and to others. And on some level, I suspect, that's why we're here. Is realizing that that our life has suffering in it, distress in it, that on some level we sense, is that necessary? Is there some way that I have something to do with that? this is difficult. I commend you all for still being here. I'm not joking. I commend myself for still being here. Really. I was ready to be gone. Kitty saw it's too difficult. It's just too, I mean, it's a different language. I mean, come on. You're tired. There's so many reasons to give up. And then our old automatic habits just keep carrying on. But something in us hangs in. Because on some level, some of us intuit that difficulty is not in and of itself necessarily bad. Distress and difficulty, the Buddha even called the first noble truth. It's actually an ennobling truth. Now, that might not be easy in the translation. Ennobling is an activity. Noble truth sounds like, oh yeah, it's a thing. All right, yeah. First noble truth, suffering, cause, end, path. Got it. I had that on the last retreat. It was pretty good. But, can we go to the next step, please? Ennobling gives more the feeling that the Buddha and all the great saints realize that when we face, open our hearts to, and are willing to be with the challenges and difficulties, that changes us. It ennobles. It makes us more stretch. It breaks our heart. But it breaks our heart so that it can get bigger, wider, not so limited, more in tune with our potential. When there's a willingness in us to work with what's not easy to work with, that's a gateway to deeper dimensions of our being and of understanding. But it's also very easy and very common in the world to take that very same struggle and difficulty and then just put it out there and blame them. And then imagine when I just blast them, then I'll be all right. And we get more bitter at them. We can blame the government. We can blame the enemies. There's even in America, which is a litigious society, people suing their parents. I messed up because of you. You did such a bad job with me. We blame God. At least that's good. Blaming God is an old, wonderful Jewish tradition. But at least if we blame God, it's preferably in private. That's a meditation, and we hear the suffering, and it can be transformed. I think it's better to blame God than to try to blame some being. Then this suffering just leads to more suffering. Because we think we've gotten rid of it by, boom, knocking that out. Then the very next thing comes at us. The Buddha realized that when we open to our suffering, our this distress, the what doesn't seem right, there's then more possibility of recognizing how we perpetuate it, how we keep it going. And even before we have that deep insight, even just the fact that we're more willing to feel it makes us more human, really human. Because that's something we share, we all share. And when we can allow ourselves to feel the frustrations, the disappointments, the pains, the hopes, the rejections. We become more human and we become more sensitive and empathetic. We can feel with others. So even if one feels, oh, a boxing match, I've just been beat up, you know, it's not a waste. Our suffering, at least here, hasn't hurt anybody, as far as I know. And we're learning how to be present. And why we didn't just start with this basic training in being present, with sitting and standing, is honing the instrument of understanding, the instrument of freedom, the instrument that can reveal things. That's this quality of presence, awareness, that which can know that I'm sitting, that can know we're hearing, that can know we're in pain, that can know when, oh, that feels better. It can know when something is pleasant. We've been steadying, developing that. Number one, this introduction to meditation. I don't say that as a criticism of it, as, oh, that's for babies, let's do the higher stuff. It's important. It's laying a foundation with many blessings in it. To repeat, if little by little we learn how to be with sitting, standing, breathing. Wait a minute, sorry, you're going too fast. This useful thing. Come on, relate it to daily life. I don't have time to do this. That reminds me of someone saying that to our teacher, Ajahn Chah. They came to him and said, Ajahn Chah, I got too much to, too busy. And Ajahn Chah said, nah. You're too busy to breathe. No. Well, if you're so busy, how come you have time to breathe? You have to breathe. Well, if you have time to breathe, do you have time to notice that you're breathing? A training that our body, I suspect, when you go home, your body will be with you. I know, I'm making a prophecy, but I'm the teacher. The body's with us, and little by little, learning how to be with a step, a breath, a walk, learning how to relax, learning how to enjoy, even if it's not particularly comfortable, learning how to allow the mind to savor, to receive that in and of itself has a blessing of making us more present for our life. It's one of the blessings the Buddha said. Two, we learn little by little to have a more pleasant way of being, what he called a pleasing abiding. Three, when it gets, more knowledge arises, when we're more knowledge and vision in the simple level, it just means when we're awake and present, we are in direct contact with things that we know, it's like this. As our samadhi gets deeper, sometimes we find ourselves seeing and knowing things that are more unusual. Intuition. But the most profound blessing from what we've been doing these first few days, the first three in and of themselves are good, and that'll make us, even just that, before I do the most important one, even just that is a gift to our family, our country, our world, to Mother Earth. She's clapping her hands that we're up here meditating. People think, you know, we to be happy that to have fancier equipment, this, that, mining more, getting more out of the earth. people that are learning how to be full and enjoy something simple, like listening, relaxing. Can you imagine a world where more people are learning to be more content with less, with what we need, not have to just more. Nothing's ever enough. So just even that level. The most profound level is then with any quality of presence that we have, we then can be liberated from the causes of suffering if we use it to be interested. And when I first started meditation, I wasn't interested in the last one because I thought the third one was the last one. As I started to meditate, and I was a mess, my first retreat, I was all over the place. Everything was hurting. Mine was crazy. But I had a moment. I think it was the third day. Had a moment. I mean, here I was a wrestling champion. You are looking at, I know it's hard to believe, but you are looking at 5-time Mid-South champion. Come on, what kind of joke is that? Okay, I used to have muscles. 2, National Invitational Prep champion. I was always interested in the next tournament, in getting the best grades, because I also was really good at school. And so I got the top grades, and I was wanting to get to success. Exhausting. But my mom, she was a mom's mom. She took pictures of all I did, and the trophies were everywhere. So then when I'd open the books, oh, yeah, I'm all right. I'm all right. And close the books. I didn't know how to appreciate anything because I had to get to the next. When I won the national tournament, I had been working for years. I could walk on my hands for 100 yards. I could climb ropes. I could do 500 push-ups a day. And when I won the tournament, yeah! But how long does your arm stay up there? The rest of your life, I thought you get successful, that's it. You know, but guess what? They go to the next match and the referee says, excuse me, we got another one coming. In 5 minutes, I was worrying. I'm the champion, but who's coming back next year? Who will I have to fight next year? Suffering. Didn't understand it. So in meditation, I was always going to success. So this was a totally new thing to find some peace here. So it was hell. But on day 3, a moment, as I was practicing being with the breathing, just pausing, of being, so delicious. And my mind wants that. And of course it ran away. But then as I got a little better at practice, and got a little more peaceful, just like that experience that someone was... Yeah, I was mentioning, what's your name? Hada. Was mentioning, oh, when that delicious feeling of calm comes, yes, this must be what they're talking about. It's like the image that always comes back to mind. I grew up on Lake Chickamauga in Tennessee, and on a summer's evening, the lake is smooth and quiet. And just as you're enjoying a whisper can be heard a mile away, it seems like. Peace itself. And then, I can only do one at a time, but then you get another one going, and another one going, all these motorboats coming, and some people are wanting water ski, and this and that, and making all this racket. Can't they see? And where's my peace? Tranquility is beautiful, and we're getting better at being able to have moments. It's skillful. It's good. But that sort of tranquility is like everything else. It's impermanent. The Buddha realized that. He used it for refreshment, for healing, for skill, and it's living skillfully. But then he also turned that awareness to look at the state itself, because he saw, if I cling to this, then when it changes, I suffer. I'm a slow learner, so don't feel bad if you cling to that. Even years into my monastic life, I once made a war on clocks, ticking clocks. As I got deeper in my meditation, how dare someone in a monastery bring a ticking clock into a shrine room? Each tick was like a big gong. Bong. Once, I was very clever, because I would... Once even the abbot made a big ticking clock there, and I'm thinking, what is he doing? So I surreptitiously put padding under the clock. I even tried to find another one to change the clocks so that I could get more... And then at some point, there's the recognition, the kittisaro, that's called, in English, wrong view, kittisaro. It's like you're not understanding something. You know, we could, if that's the case, we could just, I could say to Gil, I could say, hey, Gil, you know, really, they're just, you know, could you make a little sensory deprivation chamber for each yogi? And then we could... You know, earmuffs and all that stuff. And but they would move their little finger so each one could temperature control. Little up, little down. And, of course, you'd have to have an itching thing. There could be some, but, you know, it wouldn't be that expensive. And the managers could just track it. And everyone could have everything perfect. It's endless. Then you have to go to the toilet. What are you going to do about that? It's endless. So calming without insight. Calming's important. Let's not make fun of it. But it's, and the Buddha gave a beautiful example to demonstrate the nature of things. He said, how do you tell the difference between someone who's not trained, not a contemplator, not a spiritual practitioner, someone who's ignorant of these matters? How do you distinguish them from a wise one? And the Buddha said, well, if an untrained, someone who's not familiar with the spiritual matters, not a contemplator, not a meditator, experiences pain. Now, Tanisara brought up Vedana, the second dimension, important dimension of our beingness, is feeling. We're feeling beings. The nature of that feeling, every moment of sight and sound and taste and touch and thought, is accompanied by feeling. Being pleased, liking it, that's called a pleasant feeling. Not liking it, painful feeling, displeased. If you don't know whether it's painful or pleasant, but you're wishing it would go away, that's called pain. It's not necessarily a knife, but even an uncomfortable feeling so that we have to run out of the hall, that's called pain. Discomfort. And then there's that in the middle that, well, you can't, like my right cheek is, it's not painful, it's not in ecstasy. My right cheek is in ecstasy. No, it's neutral. So, an untrained person, when they experience in pain, something they don't like, oh, I don't, why is this way? Just like, your name again, Hida, you said? Huh? Hadas. Hadas. Feeling that discomfort after eating, we can think, oh gosh, I've lost it. What? The Buddha says she didn't wail, she was very composed, but one laments it, one grieves, one is upset, or we can even think of stronger situations. If I'm really, have a painful feeling of exhaustion and then I think, oh gosh, this exhaustion is never going away, I just don't, how many years has it been and what did I do in my last life? So we go like that. And so the Buddha said that is like an archer. Archer is someone who shoots arrows. Shoots an arrow and hits you. But it is as if they shoot a second arrow as well and that one hits you. So you're experiencing a physical pain, pain in the body from the first discomfort. But then you're experiencing another pain on top of it. The pain of, oh, I wish it shouldn't be like this. Why that? The second arrow. And because of that, aversion to the pain, we deepen our tendency to become averse. Let me say that again. The second arrow is coming, the mental pain's coming by aversion, by not wanting it to be that way. We deepen that habit, what the Buddha called anusaya, latent tendencies, these underground habits. We deepen the habit of aversion, of thinking, of just falling into no. Because of that pain, we seek an escape from the pain, and so then we look for something pleasant. Go back to the dining hall. Maybe if I just have one more, or with me, I can see that sometimes when I was really suffering in the monastery, we only ate one meal a day, so it's understandable. But sometimes it was so difficult to be with my suffering. I'd want to be mindful to eat the food, but the next thing I know, I'd eaten my whole bowl of food and didn't even realize I'd eaten it. And you think you felt bad. I then felt like a beached whale, and I crawled back to my hut, never again, never, ever, I'll do that again. Never, never. But when we're suffering, sometimes we think the escape from suffering is finding something pleasant to distract us. Oh, I just go over there because it looks nice. Or I'll eat something and I'll forget about the suffering and I'll just eat a big bowl of ice cream. Tamisha knows about my ice cream problems. I'm working on them and now I'm very dispassionate. In seeking to end the suffering by going away from pain just to something that's pleasant, we deepen our tendency toward lust, toward desire. And not really understanding the nature of feeling, pleasure and pain, we deepen our tendency toward ignorance as well. And because of that, the Buddha says we are bound to birth and death. bound to suffering, bound to pleasure, bound to pain. Holding on to something that's pleasant, like a state, like the calm lake. Getting upset when it changes. Falling into aversion, thinking that, oh, maybe the next pleasant thing, we can hold on to that. That just leads to more suffering. That's what's called an untrained, ignorant person. The Buddha said, well, what about the wise, the practitioner, the contemplator? We'll experience painful feeling. So did the Buddha. People tried to kill the Buddha. When someone pushed a boulder down a mountain and broke his toe, that hurt. It's not that he didn't have, he was just, no, he was enlightened. He must have been in a cloud all the time. People tried to kill him. He got sick. He had back problems. He had pain. But because of that pain, he didn't lament. He didn't grieve about the pain. He didn't say, oh, why is me, and get angry, and because of getting angry, he didn't seek a distraction from the pain as an escape, because he knew that's not the escape from pain. What's the escape from pain? Knowing it. Its nature is impermanent. It comes and goes. Because when one tries to escape from pain just by grabbing at something else that's pleasant, one just deepens desire, deepens aversion, and whatever one's grabbed hold of as pleasant also eludes us. And then the pain keeps following us around. And one is ignorant. But the wise one is shot by the arrow, one arrow. There's a physical pain. The Buddha had the pain of illness. The pain of a fragile body. He had the pain of old age. But he didn't add mental pain. There was not a second arrow. Now that we have a little more composure, we're opening up the meditation. Yes, be as calm as we can. But also start to notice this nature of things. That what arises ceases. The Buddha taught that just to see the changing nature of every moment, every form, every feeling, every circumstance, that when we see that, then there will be the understanding of how suffering comes about. Because something that's changing, how can it satisfy us? How can it make us happy if its nature is to become otherwise? The Buddha encouraged us to first start simply. We don't have to go far. We can stay with our breathing, stay with our moments of composure. But just adjusting slightly, as we breathe, as we steady ourselves, can we notice that this so-called breath is changing every instant? The in-breath sounds like a thing. My breath, a good breath, a great breath. But it's changing. The in-breath ends and becomes the out-breath, which vibrates. It's changing. Can we be at peace with the change? Can we notice that this so-called thing, the language makes it sound like a thing, breath. But the word is just an approximation. It's a pointer. The reality is that this so-called thing is not a thing. The Buddha taught us that if we really get to know that in and out, in vibrating out, that we'll start to understand a characteristic that's true of every single thing that we take to be me. It might sound so simple. I say this all the time, but, you know, is that all you got, Kitty Sorrow? Change? I mean, that's pretty obvious. Can't you just, let's get to this emptiness thing and the not-self thing? All the profound insights come from this one direct understanding. It's so important that the Buddha said even a finger snap, even just a one moment of understanding change has tremendous virtue in it, tremendous what's called punya, auspicious energy, because when we don't understand change, then we, by assumption, take things to be me, my health, my meditation state, my loved ones. And in that moment of assumption, holding, identifying with what the Buddha called upadana, grasping, bhava, becoming. We are born into that. We lean on that. And then when it changes, if we've leaned on a pleasant state, hallelujah, it's about time. Oh, God, I got to write home about this. It's incredible. Yeah, I worked hard and I got there. Thank the Lord. And so, you know, we got it, but then when it changes, it's, oh, we looked for something for security and then it shifted. So there's a loss of balance. That's called dukkha. That's suffering. That's aging. That's death. All because of taking something to be stable. Like success. Like this pleasant feeling when we feel good. There's something in us that wants to feel good, and that's not evil. But when we lean on it, just as the same is if you're tired and you're leaning on a car to rest. I get tired a lot. And then someone drives the car off, you fall down. It's just, if you lean on something that moves, guess what? You go down. And yet we are leaning on things all the time. So even one moment of noticing a so-called thing is becoming otherwise puts a hairline fracture. I don't know how you're going to translate that. It cracks up a little bit this objectification, this concretization, this making real all these things that actually are fluid, shifting, changing. You can do it in simple ways with the breath. And then we start to open the awareness to notice everything, not just the breath, but our body. Sensations changing, widening, contracting. Our experience now of seeing, this is the so-called meditation retreat with Kitty Sorrow and Tanisara. And my gosh, what a letdown. Can't believe it. But fantastic. They should be famous. But whatever, if we actually get right up close to it, I mean, really, honestly, this so-called Dharma talk is full of holes. Look at it. The words are there and dissolving. The reality of the retreat is becoming otherwise every instant with each phrase. And the light, as our eyes change the focus, and mixed with sensation as you notice the clothing on your skin and that knee that has been there. I mean, my God, I thought I had that fixed. Mixed with sensation and our thoughts. So the actuality, the life as it is when the awareness is shining into it is anicca. It's becoming otherwise every instant. It's a cascade. It's a waterfall of change. Sound, feeling, light, taste, thought. And yet, we're expecting that to suddenly freeze and we get to success. Woo, whoopee. When one really gets close and starts to see and experience this nature of change, then the tendency to expect that we're going to get to something that we can grab hold of, which will just stay still, we realize that's just the wish of a child. Mommy, mommy, please give, if you give me this, I promise you I will never, ever ask you for anything else. If you just, I promise. I promise. If I can just, and yet, that's what we're doing all the time when we're going forward to the next pleasing thing, or that painful thing that we then push away to get to the next pleasing thing. And it, just like that car I leaned on when it drove off, each thing we lean on, we climb on to, changes. That's called samsara, because it's endless. It's endless. And rather than beating ourselves up, we start to allow ourselves to feel the pain. That's important. To give more attention as we open up our meditation. We'll start to see how we're always wanting to get rid of what we don't want and hoping that what we do want can just stay. As we start to get a glimpse of how we've been asking from life what it can't give us, a weariness will come. It's skillful. Sometimes the world will think, oh, what's wrong with you? Just perk up. But sometimes we realize that we know that it's not just a question of the next exciting thing. Some part of us gets weary because it's a skillful disenchantment because we're starting to wake up from this dream of thinking we'll get there if we just, that world weariness, according to the Buddha, is skillful. It's a fading away, a recognition that it's not just a question of grab and hold. There's the recognition that there's something in here we need to understand. That's what helps bring us to meditation. And tomorrow and the coming days, we're going to start to deepen our here and now appreciation for how transient all that we take to be me and mine is. The body, the feelings, the thoughts, the moods, the moments of noticing. And when we take something that's changing and want it not to change, that's called a recipe for suffering. I could still be running around trying to ban all clocks in the world. ticking clocks. If I was the president of the world, there will be no ticking clocks, no annoying people. I hereby ban disturbance. And give me some time. I'll think of something else. Recipe for unhappiness. So Ajahn Chah summed up the Buddha's teaching. He was very straightforward and wonderful. He said, if you look for certainty in that which is uncertain, you are bound to suffer. Things that change, their nature, their being themselves, are uncertain. The body's fragile, it's uncertain. The weather is uncertain. Everything we can point to, see, hear, smell, taste, think. If we're looking for that to be stable, that's what suffering. So when we start letting be, letting go, allowing change to be changed, learn to relax with it. I went to Thailand wanting, you know, to get to that peaceful state that never finished. I had a big surprise. Once a week we had to sit up all night. Don't worry, I'm not going to force anything. But actually it was an incredible gift. Once a week we'd sit up all night and I'd think, tonight I'm going to crack it. I was a bit like a, you know what a snapping turtle is? It's a turtle that snaps and hangs on. I just thought, if I get hold of that nose of mine and really hang on to the peaceful, then I can really make it big enough that it just boom, gets in there and stays. Like I say, I was slow learner. So you get to the beginning of the night and you're, you know, practicing, you know, all night long is a long time, and you're sitting on concrete with one thin layer of cotton. None of these big cushion things. You know, so you start at maybe 7. But, you know, by 9:15 you're done. You know, you're finished. And then the next thing you know, everything's gone to sleep, and then the mosquitoes come in. And then, you know, you're pretty awake, but then you nod off. And then some other monk catches you just that moment when you've nodded off. And once a monk touched me just then and says, oh, how's your samadhi going? And then you feel like, yeah, I'll show you how my samadhi is. But you can't do that. And then you're nodding off, and then no one even cares because everybody's nodding off. And you're sitting on a platform, and that's dangerous because you're up. And if you got a nose like mine, if you're nodding and you fall off a platform, if I fell on my nose, I would die. Can you imagine that nose going up into my brain? So I was worried. So, you know, the states and then the mind and thinking about this and that and the aversion and the desire and the whole thing. But you know what was wonderful? I got to love that practice. Because, you know, also I was listening to some teachings too. And you're being patient. And when you want your mind to be a certain way, and it's not that way, guess what? That's the second arrow. Forget the second arrow. Third, fourth, fifth, sixth, tenth, 20th arrow. I was a porcupine. But at a certain point, when you're just practicing, oh, it's like this. It's like this. It's like this. And then there's a surrender. Yes, it's still painful. But when you're not busy hating it, wanting to be somewhere else, by the morning, when you're too tired to fight, when there's been a surrender. It was so beautiful when the sun finally started to come up and we'd walk out of the forest through the rice fields. You'd be tired, but because your mind had been struggling and finally just let go, then everything just as it is has beauty in it. It's like in school in the old days we used to use chalk, I don't know. And by the end of the day it would be dusty, but overnight secretly some janitor or some cleaning person would clean the board and it would be so beautiful and fresh in the morning. It was like that when you let go of fighting and hating things, then everything has the beauty of truth. Essentially, suffering is created by wanting things to be otherwise. And when there is a deep letting be, we can touch the beauty, the peace that's part of our nature. So, I encourage us to be patient. Keep doing the simple practice of being with how it is, standing, walking, breathing. But then let's start opening our heart to change. And rather than hating change, have moments of allowing things, resting and relaxing with change. And even allowing ourselves to notice when we're really struggling. But in a moment, as we practice being willing to be with the difficulty, we might notice a moment when we're not just wishing it to go away or trying to get somewhere else. We'll notice a moment then where we're not leaning on it. We're resting in our nature. When we deeply understand that everything that comes goes, that all that is transient has the nature of anicca, then we'll understand the suffering that comes from wanting things to be what they can't be. We'll realize that we might call it my success, my body, my peace, my loved one, but really, that's a way of talking. We'll understand that it belongs to nature, to Mother Nature, to God, to the cosmos, whatever you want to call it. There'll be a letting go. Not self means non-possession, a letting go, and we'll touch again that ground where all things come together. That place where we've always already been. The Buddha said this peace, right here, even in the midst of every pain, every situation, this peace is always sanditiko. It's always here. It's inviting us. All that's required is that we open ourselves. So please, even if it seems like we've just been in a boxing match and lost 100 rounds, it's not a waste. We're deepening our strength and capacity to be human, to be present. And there will be moments, and those moments will increase, where we will taste the peace that is always already here. When we have moments of letting be, letting go, honoring the Dharma nature of things. So to finish this day of practice, giving ourselves credit for living a day that is a good day. Even if we feel like the day has been useless, believe me, there's been many blessings cultivated here in our practice of listening, patience, learning to live together as a group, being supported by the managers and staff, aligning with the wonderful teachings of the wise one, the awakened ones, the Buddhas. Finishing the day wishing, may our good fortune and our blessings, with the ease of each out-breath, because we don't want to try to cling, because it just leads to more suffering, may we relax and let those blessings touch each cell in our body. Our good karma, may it be shared with each other and our families, loved ones, those in this world and those beyond, near and far, seen and unseen, as we relax like a pebble in a pool sending ripples. As we relax, letting our blessings touch all beings. May all beings experience peace. May all beings find a good friend. May all beings be free from suffering. Good night, everyone.